FedEx Forum, Growl Towels, Super Grizz, each one a Memphis Grizzlies tradition. This is the Grizzlies Podcast.
What's up, everybody? We are back with another episode of the Grizzlies Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Barnes. We're here with DeMichael Cole, your Grizzlies beat writer. Lots going on in the Grizzlies world as we record this. That five-game losing streak, is over, and the Grizzlies are back on the winning track. They play Wednesday at home against the Portland Trail Blazers and Damian Lillard. But before we get into anything else, that game is also important because that will be the long-awaited season debut of one Danny Green, who the Grizzlies acquired this summer. Danny Green broke that news himself on his own podcast, so he will be available on February 1st, which means we'll all get a chance to finally get a look at him and see kind of what he looks like, the shape he's in after his terrible knee injury in last season's playoffs with the Philadelphia 76ers. DeMichael, let's start with you. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about what Danny Green can do, what he brings to the table, but let's maybe go into, like, what are some reasonable expectations that Grizzly fans should have of someone like Danny Green, who is got some skills that he has, but is also coming off tearing two ligaments in his knee?
Expect, you know, for one, let's start with the off the court stuff, right? That's because that's where the expectations, I think, Evan, when you're talking about Danny Green, that's where the expectations can be higher. He's a three-time champion. You know, he's played with the best of the best, right? He's played with Kawhi Leonard, Pascal Siakam, LeBron James, you know, Anthony Davis, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Joel Embiid. You know, the list goes on. Like, he has played with some of the greatest players in the game of basketball. So that's experience. I've had people, you know, tell me how great, you know, of a locker room player he is. You know, one person told me that for him to be a role player, he stepped up huge in big games, you know, throughout his time in Philadelphia. Had people talk about his leadership there, his leadership in Toronto, you know, being a big part of that championship team. So it seems like that's the part that you can bank on him. And really hearing the Grizzlies players talk about him up to this point, what they've said is, you know, they really, you know, put value into him being a three-time champion. I don't think any guy can just walk in this Grizzlies locker room and command their respect like Danny Green has so far, because he's a champion, because he, you know, has the credentials, you know, to do so. So that's where you automatically say that's the, you know, you're going to get that. Now, you know, everyone wants to talk about the on the court stuff. And it's a great question because it's a mystery, right? You know, ACL injuries, we have seen guys come back and just, you know, not skip a beat. We've also seen guys come back and never look the same again. And we've seen everything in between. We've seen, you know, guys go from all-star level to just a really solid player, but he's not the same player he used to be. And, you know, people throw in Danny Green's age and all that. But I tell you what, watching this guy shoot in practice, the stroke looks good. I think the stroke will still be there. I think that's where he can provide, you know, a valuable asset to this team. Defensively, just talking again, I've been talking to people, you know, from his previous teams in Toronto and in Philly and in LA, and they all kind of compliment him as a team defender. I thought that was something that stood out to me because a lot of people, I think, so far in Memphis have thought about what can he bring as an individual defender, right? As another one of those wing guys who can step up and guard, you know, those tough matchups. But I mean, you know, I was told when he had to guard Trae Young in that series with the Sixers, that wasn't his greatest matchup. He didn't really do that well, you know, against Trae Young in that matchup. But he's smart. He's savvy. He's a great veteran defender. But, Evan, I tell you what, the thing about it is I think the starting lineup is pretty set in tone. So where Danny Green's impact will be felt is, you know, he's going to play in probably 18, 22 minute increments, and the 3-point shot. The Grizzlies are not one of the top 3-point shooting teams in the league, and that's where he'll make a mark on this team.
Definitely. And I think with Danny Green, you mentioned a lot of things. Like, to me, I've said it since I was the beat writer. The one thing the Grizzlies probably lack is another grown-up or veteran on this team that can kind of guide, you know, settle things down a little bit. Because it is one thing when you have a lot of great young players, but you win with veterans. And so I think having him on the court absolutely is going to be the most important impact. Because, again, being in the locker room absolutely helps. But when you're on that court and you got somebody who knows what he knows, I think that's going to be a great, great help. But I also think, too, like, you know, fans are going to have to temper their expectations a little bit. Look, Danny Green, 35 years old. He's 3 years younger than me. You know, we're talking about somebody who has been around the league for a long time. And we should make note, he didn't just tear his ACL. He tore his LCL as well in his left knee. So he had to repair two ligaments in his left knee. And at 35 years old, that's going to be very, very challenging for anyone to overcome, much less an NBA player with Green's capability. So I do think
why what you just said, Evan, that's why I can't wait to talk to him. Because 8 months?
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Eight months. I mean, we've seen this, right, with some of the more prominent players in the league recently. Kawhi Leonard missed the entire season. Jamal Murray missed an entire season. Danny Green is returning before the All-Star break of the next season, and he got hurt in the playoffs of the preseason, not even the regular season of the previous season. He got hurt in the playoffs in May of the previous season, and he's returning before the All-Star break. So you wonder, you know, like, the Grizzlies, I mean, you know, like I do, they are very careful with these guys when it comes to these type things. But 8 months, it makes you wonder, because I like to, you know, you would think like, oh, when he suffered this injury, right? He's 35. He was 34 at the time. And you're probably thinking a 34-year-old guy, oh, he's done for next season. You know, if Kawhi Leonard and Jamal Murray, and, you know, the injuries are, sure, they're different, you know, small structural things in the knee with each of those, you know, ACL injuries. But you probably think, like, oh, yeah, he's done for the season. But for him to come back in 8 months, I think that's also telling, too. And we'll see how telling that is. You know, I feel like it's easy. It could go either way, right? It could be, man, he's the same player. Like, he is the same player beforehand. He crushed this rehab process. Or it could be, okay, he kind of rushed himself back. So, and I don't, you know, the Grizzlies medical staff, as we've seen this season, they've been very careful. You've seen a lot of guys prop up on the injury report with soreness. It was something I asked Taylor Jenkins about in Sacramento, and he gave me a great answer and basically saying that this season, you know, after the way last season went, right? Remember in the playoffs, Ja gets hurt, right? Desmond Bane's back is flaring up, and these guys have all played, you know, so many games over the course of the season. And Jaren Jackson Jr. eventually suffers an injury that's kind of, you know, goes hand in hand with usage when he fractured his foot. So all that factored in, I think the Grizzlies are just being more careful. And Taylor Jenkins basically said, look, we don't want to turn any, you know, 2 days, 3 day injuries into 2, 3, 4 week injuries. So if that's their mindset, I'm sure they've been really careful with Danny Green. And 8 months from an ACL injury, if these things still align, Evan, if the Grizzlies are still doing their due diligence on being careful, like we've seen them do over the course of time, and him returning back in 8 months, I don't see how that's not a sign that he kind of crushed this process.
Well, I'm going to throw some perspective on ACL recovery, because you mentioned eight months. So I guess it really all depends on the state of the injury, because I'm looking at something right now that says 8 to 12 months is about standard recovery time for the most part. And I'm even looking at something right now where Iman Shumpert in 2012 had an ACL injury in the playoffs and was out for less than 9 months. And then another player, Baron Davis, this kind of goes dating me a little bit. Baron Davis had an ACL injury as a freshman, I believe, in the NCAA tournament. He came back and played his sophomore year later on, and obviously went on to a, you know, long career. So we've seen guys come back from 8 months even before, like, modern medicine has done its job. So that really is encouraging. Now, to be clear, Iman Shumpert was a rookie at the time. Baron Davis was a sophomore in college. So their recovery might have been a little bit faster with them being younger. But it does show you that 8 to 12 months on the fast end, I am concerned about that because, again, you don't want to re-aggravate it. You obviously hope that Danny Green is able to get his legs and find his way. And for people who think to themselves, well, he's just probably going to be a corner shooter, a spot-up shooter, that's still a lot of pressure to put on your legs, because that's obviously where your shooting comes from. You know, you're not just a shooter based on, you know, your arms, it's your legs, you know. And you can look at Klay Thompson to see kind of how he has recovered, but he's also had games where he has kind of looked a little bit rough. Now, granted, Klay had an ACL and an Achilles, but yeah, there's a lot of different ways this can go. So your hope, and what's encouraging is that with Danny Green back so quickly, your hope is that the Grizzlies are going to, of course, ease his way back, and they will. But you do hope that he can contribute something on the court and not just be like a rallying piece of sorts. Like, you hope that he can contribute, because that's kind of what the Grizzlies are hoping for. But I do think fans should kind of temper their expectations. Like, if he can get you maybe 2 to 3 threes a game, you know, play solid help defense with the Grizzlies team that's so good at help defense, like you mentioned, I think that's a pretty fair expectation. But I would say be very patient and cautious, because, again, you are talking about somebody who is 35 years old coming off of this injury. There is going to be some adjustment. There is going to be some rust. And so I hope that people don't think that Danny Green is all of a sudden going to be like the big, you know, the big savior or something like that. I don't think most fans have that. But I think even if you are reasonable with them, just keep those expectations tempered. Because, yeah, again, you are talking about a veteran in this league with a lot of mileage on him, and you hope that he can be a quality reserve to help out, as opposed to, say, being a starter and, you know, contributing starters' minutes.
Yeah, you want him, like you said, you just want him to be a good role player. You're not getting Danny Green to be Klay Thompson, you know, an all-star, you know, historic shooter. You're getting Danny Green to be that guy who, when he's on the floor with Ja Morant and Desmond Bane, Ja's getting the easiest looks probably that he's got in his career, you know, at the rim, because teams aren't going to leave Desmond Bane, and they don't want to leave Danny Green, you know, when he's playing, you know, at his level. So that's kind of what I think you want on the offensive end. And then, of course, the defensive end, we just talked about it. Like, you want the team defense, right? You want a guy who's going to be willing to take on those matchups, you know, against, you know, those tougher, the Paul Georges and the Kawhi Leonards, the Devin Bookers and et cetera, you know, in the Western Conference. You want someone who's going to be able to take on those matchups if Dylan Brooks isn't in the game. Or, and how about this, Evan? Here's another thing where I think the Grizzlies haven't had this option much. We talk about Dylan Brooks, right, and as up and down as his offensive numbers can be. What about the option of, if Danny Green's hot one day, now you have another guy you can say, okay, you know, Dylan doesn't have it today. You can put Ja, Desmond Bane, those two aren't leaving the floor, but you could put Danny Green on the floor, potentially, you know, in a closing game scenario in place of Dylan Brooks. And, I mean, he's not a Dylan Brooks-level defender, but he is, you know, he is someone who has started the past nine seasons of his NBA career. So it's just, you know, just throwing out potential ideas. You know, they'll have options. Not saying he's, you know, like a perfect replacement. Just saying they will have the option on the table that they don't really, you know, I don't think right now they feel comfortable, you know, with Zaire Williams being that option. But I think, yeah, that's my point, because and definitely not with John Conchar either. But I feel like Danny Green, there is more comfort knowing that, you know, he's going to shoot it, for one. You know, he's going to get open. You know, teams respect his shooting, and I mean, defensively, he's no Dylan Brooks, but he is a physical guy. We've seen him walking around. He has a nice stature to him. He can kind of hold his own physically, you know, against the threes. You know, he's some big threes in the Western Conference, so he can kind of hold his own against those type guys. But Evan, what do you think about that? I think, you know, that's kind of the other thing. Or, I mean, it's so many ways you can go. Some people will say, hey, put Dylan at the three. I mean, put Danny Green at the three. Dylan at your four. Jaren Jackson Jr. at your five. Get a little small ball thing going. Like, at the end of the day, it gives you more options having a guy like that who has a lot of starting experience, because you look on that bench right now, it's not a lot of starting experience.
Okay, so you mentioned insurance for Dylan Brooks. I would say he's more insurance for Zaire Williams than Dylan, because obviously in a closeout situation, I cannot say right now sit Dylan Brooks, put Danny Green out there, because that tells me that if you think Dylan Brooks is that much of a detriment, you're putting your closing lineup in the hands of, again, a 35-year-old veteran who, with all due respect, this is what is 15th season in the 14th season in the league.
Yeah, I don't but know. But not every game.
But I'm
not
saying
every game. When you get a hot game every now and then, type thing. Just like, you know, if Danny Green has the ability, he'll shoot 6 of 8 from 3-pointers one day and make a bunch of shots. It's like, okay, let's leave him in. And Dylan, you know, is not shooting great today. Like basically saying you don't have to be married to a final five players just because those are always your final five guys and they're just simply better than the other guys on the bench.
I mean, you can see a lineup probably where that would happen, but I just don't. I'm just, again, conventional NBA wisdom. Like, I'm not sitting as a younger player who's productive for a veteran, even if that veteran can shoot. Now, you may see some shooting lineups where you obviously can maybe have Ja, Bain, Green, maybe Dylan and Jaren, and spread that floor out, and that could be funny to watch too. I think that would be good. But that goes back to my expectations, right? Like, I think Danny Green, you know, if he gets hot from three, that's what you would expect. I don't think you're going to see Danny Green putting it on the floor, taking it to the basket like Dylan does. Like, I'm looking right now at his stats from 21-22, right, last season. Danny Green, who was a starter most of 21-22, had just 10 games where he made at least 4 shots. Now, granted, he's playing on a team, obviously, with Joel Embiid and James Harden, who are going to take up a lot of shots. So that tells me that you're not going to, you know, if Danny Green gets hot, it's going to be from the perimeter. He's not going to be someone who puts it on the floor and does whatever. So exactly. you're not going to expect Danny Green to, like, if he gets hot, you're going to take that and ride with it. You know, like he had 7 games last year where he made 3 threes. 7 games out of it, should be noted, 62. Now, so
Evan, go look at his playoff numbers too. The playoff numbers before the ACL injury were really good. In that year, last year.
Yeah, I mean, they were good. Like, he had a 7 of 9 3-point shooting game against the Heat. And after that, he has 2 games with 4 3-pointers. He has 3 games with 3 3-pointers. So half of his games in the postseason that year, he made at least 3 3-pointers. That's the encouraging thing that you want to see. But can he repeat that with, you know, coming off an ACL, LCL injury? Like, that's what your hope
that's
is
the
that
question.
That's your hope, that he can reach that, you know, he can be at that peak. But when you're saying you're playing in a series against a team with, like, say, a really good wing defender, maybe that wing defender's on Ja and that frees up Danny Green. But you also may say, hey, we might live and die with Danny Green making shots if it means somebody else might not. So I think it's a luxury, not a necessity, if you understand what I mean. Like, I think having Danny Green is a luxury that can take this team, give this team another weapon of sorts. But it's not a weapon you want to lean heavily on right now, unless you see more evidence that you can lean on Danny Green. And so I think that's kind of where things stand, is you want to see how much you can lean on Danny Green. And I don't think we're going to know that until maybe after the All-Star break. So time will tell for sure what impact Danny Green will have. But I think it's going to be patient, wait and see. But
yep, that's the thing right there. Be patient.
Be patient. So obviously a lot we can talk about there, but yeah, Danny Green coming back, it really comes at a time when this team probably needs a little bit more boost, especially in the half court. And that kind of leads into, like, something else I want to get into. DeMichael, you were on this road trip. When you went to every game, you saw how much the Grizzlies struggled. Obviously Steven Adams being gone for 3 to 5 weeks with a sprained knee is obviously going to be a huge hurt. But just overall, maybe, like, as we, you know, move on now to a new month coming up here in February, what were the biggest concerns you saw on this road trip that maybe, just maybe, you can't explain away by saying, well, the Grizzlies, you know, aren't a good road team or whatever, but what were some concerns that you thought, you know, and you wrote about one of them actually, but what were maybe some of the biggest concerns you saw that people should take note from?
Yeah, the one you're talking about that I wrote about was the free throw shooting. And it's crazy because, Evan, I wrote about it early in the road trip. I wrote about it after the game against the Lakers, right? And then we saw, again, the Golden State game, right? And it's funny. It's funny because at the end of the day, we've seen, I mean, it's the last two-minute report has not been a big deal in Memphis this season because they've just blown out so many opponents. But the last two-minute report has kind of become a little thing over the last couple weeks. Like, and the Grizzlies have gotten, you know, screwed on a couple calls. The Lakers game, the lane violation with Russell Westbrook with Brandon Clark, and the moving screen on Draymond Green against the Warriors. But what those both of those games also had in common were a bunch of missed free throws. In the Warriors game, you lose by two, but you shoot 70%, 26 of 37 from the free throw line. 11 missed free throws. And it's not just, you know, because for one, the starting lineup has Josh shot 7 of 12 from the free throw line against Golden State. You can't have that. And Desmond Bain, I know he's held to a high standard because he's a great free throw shooter, but he shot 4 of 6. He missed two. And you don't see that much, you know. So with all that being said, free throw shooting is near the top because – We've seen in those two close losses, when the Grizzlies get in those close games, guess what? They're going to have to knock their free throws now. We saw the Lakers even pulled out. They hacked Steven Adams. They hacked Brandon Clark. They lost to the Suns as well in that game, you know, by 2 points. And same thing, 70% from the free throw line. When they lost to the Suns by two, came back from down 29, but 19 of 27 from the free throw line. The Suns shot 84% from that game. I think the Warriors were close, you know, to 80% when they beat them. And, you know, the Lakers, not a great free throw shooting team by any stretch of the imagination. But when the Grizzlies lost that game, the Grizzlies shot 26 of 40, 65%. The Lakers were 33 of 41. Basically, the Lakers took one more free throw than the Grizzlies and made seven more in a game that they won by 1 point. So free throw shooting is at the top because I think that's no matter where you're home, road, that's one of the things that we've seen, you know, the team have problems with, you know, regardless. But I think there are other issues as well. I think one that stands out to me is the half court scoring.
Yes.
Half court scoring it's
been
a problem.
It's been a problem, frankly, under the entire Taylor Jenkins era, if we keep it honest. But we can get to that detail more. But it's been a problem under this tenure. It's kind of the trade-off of, hey, they want to run the ball really well and they do a great job in transition. But the half-court offense, we saw last postseason, that could be a problem. And it's kind of a problem now.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Evan. It gets masked up a lot, right? And it get masked up by Steven Adams and him being one of the best offensive rebounders, not just in the NBA right now, but of the last decade. And Steven Adams, you know, he has this, his, you know, response. I'm sure you've heard him say it. Anytime someone asks him, why are you getting, how do you get so many offensive rebounds? Like, what are you doing? And he says, oh, we're missing so many shots. And everybody laughs it off. But it's true. It's kind of like a dark truth in that joke, Evan. And the dark truth is they're missing a lot of shots because the half court offense has not been efficient. And Steven Adams has just been right there, he grabs the ball and you know, he can put it back and you know, or you know, you get great. I feel like the easiest ways to create offense in the NBA, and I'm sure the Grizzlies think this way too, and it's why they're one of the best at both of these categories, transition points, second chance points. Both are opportunities where you're going against a defense that's not set. When you get an offensive rebound, the defense is scrambling. You have guys, they're just trying to put bodies on, you know, Grizzlies players trying to box them out. When you get that offensive rebound, you're going against a scrambling defense. Same thing in transition. Guys are just getting back, picking up the ball, no matter who it is. So that's the thing. Right now, and you say, hey, how can they improve, you know, in half court? Well, Evan, you remember. This is a conversation we had last season, and I wasn't here the year before that, but I'd be willing to bet you probably were having the same conversation the year before because of the way the team is kind of built. Like, they don't have – you know, those two, three guys, you know, who are going to get to that mid-range, you know, bread and butter, like a DeMar DeRozan, a Kevin Durant, or, you know, like a Devin Booker, a Jason Tatum. You know, you have Ja, who's going to try to get to the rim. And when Ja Morant tries to get to the rim, every team is preparing for that. We saw literally the Timberwolves have four guys in the paint a lot of times in the playoffs last season, just waiting on Ja Morant to run right into him. And when that happens, who's your secondary guy? I think we think it's Desmond Bain. He can be that guy. Jaren Jackson Jr. in the most recent game we saw was that guy. I mean, he was incredible, you know, in that game against the Pacers. But you need it consistently. You know, I see a lot of fans message me about attacking mismatches and things like that. And I'll just point out one. I don't want to hover on that topic too long, Evan, but that Golden State game, something stood out to me. Golden State, as you know, they try to hide Steph Curry on defense a lot, basically saying, hey, he will get the weakest assignment on the wing to kind of rest him a little bit. That's not something that's just, you know, Golden State. The Grizzlies do the same thing with Ja Morant a lot. They have him guard, you know, spot up shooters, so he doesn't have to guard guys who are doing all the dribble moves and making him slide his feet a lot and basically expending a lot of energy on defense. But the thing about that is, you know, with the Grizzlies and like I said, Ja Morant, you know, sliding his feet, moving around defensively and stuff like that is it creates, you know, it creates opportunities.
No, I was just going to say, just to kind of like, so to sum up what you said, the two biggest concerns that came on that road trip that you noticed were free throws and half court offense.
Yep.
And we both agree on that because I think that that's something that clearly, as you mentioned, and we've seen there be a history, you're not going to win a lot of champ. You're not going to put yourself in a position to win a championship with low free throw shooting unless you happen to have a generational player on your team. I'm going to just throw this out because I had to look this up real quick. And I think, thankfully, somebody had a site up where I can pull this up. So the Grizzlies right now are shooting 71.4% as we record this on free throws. The lowest by an NBA champion this century, so since 2002. The Lakers three-peat, they won the championship shooting less than 70% on free throws. Now, granted, that was helped by Shaquille O'Neal being one of the, you know, worst free throw shooters in the league at the time. But you also had Shaq as a generational player at his peak. You had Kobe Bryant starting to emerge at the peak, so they could overcome that. The 2006 Miami Heat shot 70% on free throws when they won the championship that year. Shaq was also on that team, obviously an anchor. But Dwayne Wade had an incredible season, had an incredible playoff run. They were able to overcome that. So what I think you could take away from that is to kind of wrap it up on your point on free throws. Yes, the Grizzlies can probably make a run, but it's very, very difficult when you're not shooting free throws. And it's bigger than just, you know, Steven Adams on the team. Like, if you look at some of those other guys, I think I saw the other day at Jaren Jackson and Brandon Clark are shooting below their career average. And we obviously know, you know, the stat that we keep pulling up, Ja Morant, I believe, is the, of all the top 15 NBA scorers, Ja is the second worst free throw shooter ahead of Luka Doncic. And that's a concern. Like, if you get into a tight game, you know, like that, like that Lakers game, they hit all those free throws until Brandon Clark missed that one. And so to supplement your story about how that free throw flaw can prevent a team from winning a championship, the Grizzlies right now would be the worst free throw shooting team since the 2006 Heat if they were to win the championship with the free throw shooting percentage they have right now. That tells you that it's really hard to overcome that, and it means the Grizzlies are going to have to collectively do better. Not just Steven Adams. Obviously, Steven Adams is not going to elevate that, but you have to be able to make free throws besides him, and that's the biggest concern in that department. So I want to throw that stat out there to kind of give perspective on historically how it's really difficult to win a championship when you're not hitting your free throws. And then half-court offense, we've talked about that a lot. I think this is where Steven Adams is going to be his presence is going to be missed. I mean, I think I put up a stat in that story we wrote about his recovery. I think the Grizzlies, I believe, they score 10.9 points per 100 possessions more with Steven Adams on the court than when he's off it, just to show you how much he helps with second chance points, screening, all those things. And so that obviously came to a head during the end of the road trip. And also now, you know, when the Grizzlies stumbled against the Pacers a little bit before they regrouped a little bit, those things concern me, because if you want to be a championship team, you have to execute in half court no matter what. I don't care how good you are in transition. The Showtime Lakers, as good as they were, they were also very good in transition. The Warriors, for as good as they can be with those runs, they were great in the half court, or consistent in the half court. That's where it's going to come down to. And yes, we're obviously projecting way down the road, but I think now that we're in the second half of the season, your flaws are going to get nitpicked a little bit more closely, especially when you show them on ESPN where everybody can see them, you know?
And everybody is good in the West. Like, it's no joke. And all the, you know how many teams right now in the West, like, I'm just, you know, I scroll through, like, see what fans of certain teams are saying. There are so many teams in the West that feel like this is their year. Like, it is the Pelicans fans are, I mean, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I feel like the general thing is, like, a lot of Pelicans people are saying, man, when we get healthy, we can win this thing. The Nuggets fans are saying, oh, we finally got our guys back, right? We can do this. The Clippers been one of the hottest teams. You know, like, they've jumped all the way up to the fourth seed. They feel like they can do it. You know, the Timberwolves are playing better basketball. Man, wait till we get Karl Anthony Towns back. The Warriors, I mean, they have no reason not to feel like they can't, right? Because they have done it, you know, up to this point. That's
the West is wide open. I think the West is absolutely wide
open. It's so many teams. I mean, I've heard even Lakers people who think now that they have Anthony Davis back, and we saw them go toe-to-toe with the Boston Celtics in the game they probably should have won. You know, they feel like, hey, if we sneak in, look out. Like, there are so many teams in the Western Conference who are really good, and that's part of it, too. You can't – those just little small details of the games, that's why we're pointing these out. The Grizzlies don't have, like, super huge problems, but the little small things, you know, free throw shooting, you know, half-court offense, those are going to be the difference. I think someone pointed it out to me, Evan. The Grizzlies are really good at those regular season things. You know, like transition scoring. You can stand out in the regular season with that.
Yep.
In the postseason, you can't stand out with transition scoring, because on those plays where guys aren't hustling back in the regular season, say, oh, we'll give up that two, fight for the next possession. The postseason, it's all out. It's all or nothing. Everyone's hustling back. Everyone's exhausting full energy. And we see in the postseason as well, that's when it becomes more of an isolation game, because teams know what plays you're running. They're taking you out of that stuff. And we talk, that's all goes back to the half court offense. You look at the, you know, the finals last season, it was high skill level. You had Jaylen Brown going one-on-one, Jason Tatum going at guys, Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins. Like, it was high skill level. And the Grizzlies are going to need that, you know, in order to be that type of team.
Yeah, I agree. And I think too, like, this is why, you know, it's important to talk about, because I think, like you said, the margins for error are so slim in the West, right? In this postseason, we've talked about it, others have said it, whoever has home court advantage, that's going to be huge, because everyone on the West has struggled on the road. So these margins for error, whether it's, you know, shooting, whether it's free throws, whether it's executing in the half court, all these things are going to be things that are going to kind of linger over this season, because we've talked about this. The Grizzlies have not caught anyone by surprise this year. They've done what they needed to do. They've taken care of business last year. They've shown that they're not a flash in the pan. So I think these are absolutely things that we can talk about and discuss as the second half, you know, of the season heats up. So I think we'll end it right there. We covered a lot of ground here. We got a lot to discuss, but we'll end it right there. So for DeMichael, I'm Evan. It's obviously going to be a fun February, obviously, this week. Stay tuned, because the All-Star reserves will be announced on Thursday, and we all expect John Morant will likely hear that he is an All-Star for the second consecutive season. We'll stay tuned on that. So for DeMichael, I'm Evan. Y'all be good.
The Grizzlies Podcast is a production of The Commercial Appeal.